And Robert Morris.
Good afternoon, Senator Baker and Representative Kmiger and the rest of the panel. I'm here this afternoon representing two entities. One is the Maine Seaweed Council, which I'll present on first, and the second is on rockweed in the company that I own that processes rockweed. In 1995, you'll get a green brochure and a speech from the president here shortly. In 1995, the seaweed harvesters and processors got together and formed the Maine Seaweed Council. We have a mission statement. We're not a trade group. Our mission statement. A mission statement is the Maine Seaweed Council strives to protect and promote the sustainable use of macroalgae harvested from and grown in the coastal waters of the state of Maine, develop and maintain a united voice to address regulatory, legislative, and public concerns affecting the seaweed industry, and promote a spirit of cooperation among its memberships. The president of the council asked me to do this presentation today. He's currently is Shep Earhart of Maine Coast Sea Vegetables. I've been a past president and a board of director member of the council. If you have this green book and you open to the center page, you will see the 11 commercially harvested seaweeds on the coast of Maine. And in this guidebook, it gives guidance of how those seaweeds are sustainably harvested. It was quite unusual to get all the competitors together to form this council, but it's worked very well. We put our differences aside, and we're still having our meetings today. So I'd like to read to you what the president's message is to the council today. This is from Shep Earhart, president of Maine Seaweed Council. And he also is the president of Maine Coast Sea Vegetables, located in Franklin, Maine. As many of you are new to this committee or new to the seaweed fishery or both, I'd like to share some basic information about this growing fishery. We are still relatively small, about a dozen operations from Casco Bay to Cobscook Bay. We are diverse in company size, from one person harvesting, processing, selling to a company of over 40 seasonal harvesters and 18 full-time processors. We have divided into base rockweed-based companies that account for approximately 90% of the landings and sea vegetable-based businesses that focus on small amounts of high-value species, kelp, alaria, dulse, nori, etc. Those are all listed in the center of that guide so you can see what the species are. And two companies that have started to grow and market aquaculture sea vegetables. There is also a large seaweed processor located in Rockland called Marine Colloids FMC Division. It currently sources all its raw materials from overseas and extracts colloidal material for industrial use. It's a very different than the other operations in Maine, but contributing to the seaweed employment. My estimates, since it's an FMC subsidiary, they don't publish it, but they're north of $80 million in sales and 150 full-time employees. This was a company that personally I started harvesting for when I was 12 years old down in Ellisville, Massachusetts, and they were located in New Bedford at that time, and they moved to Rocklands sometime after that. My first official seaweed job was picking mussels, starfish, and foreign seaweed out of the sea moss that we raked down there before it was baled. So I have a great affinity to the marine colloids. Seaweed market are also very diverse, ranging from relatively low-value plant and animal food to high-value human food, medicine, and beauty products. Health is a driving factor in all markets, as seaweed has proven to be a very healthy food for plants, animals, and humans. All these markets are strong, and some are growing at double digit, natural and organic. The age of some seaweed companies is worth noting. Four of them have been sustainably harvesting the same beds for over four decades. This has set a precedent for newcomers and is a benchmark for sustainable practices. Another notable aspect of the industry is proactivity. Created the Maine Seaweed Council more than 20 years ago to protect the resources and promote the good practices. See the harvesting guide. For years, we urged DMR to implement statewide regulations, even though there was no resource crisis and still isn't. They are now in the process of doing this with a full cooperation and with our full cooperation and support. We are determined to train newcomers to the sustainable practices and willing to share our harvesting records for scientific research. We are pioneering the development of cultured seaweed to complement wild harvest and integrate with shellfish, finfish growers to supplement their income. So please don't confuse us with other fisheries. We have not depleted our stocks, nor are we resisting reasonable regulations. There has been no credible scientific verification that harvesting as practiced in Maine has had a negative impact on resources, on associated fisheries, or on the environment. And I'll just break there for a second, because we just heard about the periwinkle thing. We have a distinguished laboratory down in East Booth Bay now called the Bigelow Laboratory. They coordinated, Dr. Larson coordinated with, I forget his name now, from Suffolk University, and they did a periwinkle study post-rockweed harvesting in Cobscook Bay. And within 1 year, this is a peer-reviewed published paper, you'll hear a lot of information presented here that has no scientific peer-reviewed information, it's opinion by people. Well, this peer-reviewed paper, after harvest of rockweed in Cobscook Bay, increased the commercial periwinkle harvest by 314%. These studies are available, unlike what we heard a few minutes ago. And the reason it does that is because it opens up the canopy and it allows the green algae to grow on the rocks underneath. And when that's what the commercial harvested, which is actually an invasive species, eats. Understandably, there is a little public trust in most fisheries today, and many fear we are similar. I encourage you not to be blinded by those fears or assumption. When the conservationists urge you to use the cautionary principle or contend that more research is needed before more harvest, please consider our track record and long-term commitment to the resource. What we need more than anything right now is your good judgment. Help us continue what we have already been doing, and remember that the value of seaweed to the people of Maine is both economic and environmental. Please help us keep that balance. Shep Earhart, Maine Coast. Maine Seaweed Council President, founder of Maine Coast Sea Vegetables. Any questions about the council?
Any questions regarding the council? Chairman Comiega. Okay, Mr. Morris.
Yes.
Thank you for your presentation, Madam Chair. The seaweed harvest seems to, especially the rockweed harvest specifically, seems to have gone up. Termino is chugging along at a fairly low rate for a number of years and seems to have gone up quite a bit in the last few years. Can you explain why?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the resources. 1 million standing tons of rockweed on the coast of Maine, and there's approximately 1% being harvested. Well, if you don't, you're going to
answer the question. Whenever there is a big increase in harvest, that people get you know, worried. So I'm just wondering what's behind the big increase in harvest. Is it a market's improved? Are there
what's behind the increase in harvest? And be glad to answer your question, Representative Comiega. We're the last commercial rockweed Ascophyllum nodosum bed in the world that hasn't been fully developed. And the reason for that is we've had a strong dollar policy here. The markets for organic and natural products have increased. If you go to Whole Foods and, say, buy something that's in the non-GMO sections, you will most likely have a seaweed input into that product from liquid fertilizer, plant sprays, soil conditioners, animal feed supplements. So that market has been growing. They said during the recession in 2008 that, oh, that's the end of the organic food, natural food industry. But it wasn't. It grew at 17% a year. So it's still growing at that worldwide. So that's now our dollar has corrected. It's getting strong recently. But that's given an opportunity. I was down to two people in my plant back in 2000 when the dollar, Canadian dollar, went to 69 cents. There was no way we could compete with them. And since that doll is corrected, we are now 25 people in our plant, and we're profitably growing at 20% a year. So that's what's fueling it now, that we're able to actually participate in the worldwide ascophyllum-nodosum rockweed marketing. Is that sufficient, or do you want me to go on? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions regarding the Maine Seaweed Council? And your other hat, Mr. Morse.
Yes, my other hat today was, hi, I'm Robert Morse. I've been processing rockweed in, started in Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, Stephanie's district in 1971. The rockweed fishery is like all seaweed fisheries. It's a process fishery. If I was to lay down a pound of rockweed on the table here and try to sell it, I don't think I could without processing it. First thing, it will rot in a matter of a couple of days. And so we produce fertilizers, animal feed supplements, and food products. Some of our fertilizers are actually plant growth regulators, cytokinins we extract from the rockweed. And Robin said, We can get seaweed for 3 cents a pound. I've got a job for you, Robin. I'd like to hire you as my buyer because we don't pay 3 cents a pound. Our guys get very good money for the seaweed. In here, you'll see an inclusion of what the Department of Marine Resources did a couple of years ago is a summary of the rockweed fishery in Maine. It shows that at that point that all the seaweeds, rockweed plus the other seaweeds, have an estimated $20 million a year value of sales to the state of Maine. And you'll see the numbers of what's transpired over the years. The representative, Devin, from Newcastle, last session passed a bill about ocean acidification, and I put a copy of the article that was done by Working Waterfront this month that talked about 87% of all the marine fisheries have a shell on them, and one of the recommendations of the committee was to encourage growing and harvesting kelp, rockweed, and other native algae to help prevent ocean acidification. We have lots of information like this that's very positive on our fishery, and here's another one that just came out recently. What my purpose here is today is to talk about the management program. It was a bill passed last year called 845, or numbered 845 and 545, and it requires all licensed fisheries to go through a management review plan. And rockweed was picked as the first tip of the spear to do that with. And we've got off to a great start. If anybody wants to get a copy of the plan, I believe they're available from the DMR. We've covered the biology very well on the plants and the harvesting. There's more work to be done if it's to be a real workable plan. And so I developed a letter to you here with 12 different items that are undone that I believe should be done. And I believe the law requires them to be done. And may I also say that a licensed fishery, rockweed is not just the only licensed fishery under seaweed fishing license. All 11 species are licensed there. So this rockweed is 1/11th of the whole plan. As you can see in the green book, there's 11 commercially harvested seaweeds, and there's only one seaweed license. But a lot of the things that I'm recommending here also would be applicable to the other 10 species. I strongly recommend that people holding seaweed harvesting license be included in a reconvened fishery management plan. There's 110 approximately licensed seaweed harvesters in Maine. Most of them are totally unaware that there's any management plan going on, and I think we should recruit their information. I couldn't imagine having this applied to lobsters and having not much input from the lobster licensed fishermen. That's my number one. processes and managers like ourselves should be included in the discussion to say of future and present business needs on the state fishery. I believe the purpose of the management plan is to grow full-time jobs and fishing jobs in the state of Maine. We should be included in the process to say what's working, what isn't working, and what our problems are going into the future. I recommend a careful review of the management plans for the rockweed fisheries in Norway, 70 years of sustainable harvest in Norway, British Isles, France, Iceland, Atlantic Canada, Nova Scotia and New Brunswick together, and north of $70 million of rockweed processing fishery. Their fisheries are totally intact. They compete against us all the time. We should look to see after 54 years of harvesting rockweed in the Maritimes, if they recently last year raised their cutting height from 5 inches, ours currently 6 inches, to 10 inches, and they increased their harvest amount 47%. So you could go from 17% a year to 25% a year, and their biologists after 54 years agreed that that was a move forward. They're the closest rockweed company, beds to us. Why don't we visit them and include them into our plan? We do not have to reinvent the wheel. There's other, we can tweak it. We should be able to make the best rockweed management plan out of all of those countries by picking and choosing what's working and what isn't. The FMP should have a discussion to open up Cobscook Bay with an economic plan that makes sense. The Cobscook Bay bill was passed in 2009 management plan, and it closes harvesting in front of zero tax-paying based land. All the conserved land in Cobscook Bay is banned from being harvested for rockweed. And what the committee didn't know when they voted to approve that was that 54% of the bay is in conservation land, and it is growing. So every time the land goes into conservation on the water, they're taking away a marine resource, which we feel we should have a discussion on that. Is that what we want in the state of Maine? I mean, right, this bill was also brought in by you, Representative Kamiga, last March to bring that ban down the rest of the coast. So anytime there's conserved land, there'd be no fishing, no rockweed fishing in front of it. You may shake your head, but that's how it read. The ownership issue has nothing to do with the commissioner. We keep hearing about ownership of the rockweed. I didn't hear that today from Dr. Seeley, but that's the one they've been beating on us since 2002 and saying that the ownership of rockweed is not with the people of the state of Maine. I urge you to read Title I, Chapter 1, our first laws that were passed in 1820. It's called the Sovereignty Clause. It gives our borders boundaries and our methodology. If we give something away, how the public trust rights would be given away. Number 2A says that the people of the state of Maine own all the living resources from the head of the tide to the edge of the continental shelf, or whichever comes first, 200 miles out, or the edge of continental shelf, whichever comes first. And number 3 says that we, the people of the state of Maine, own the bottom out there as well. And so that's, and in there, for you people here on this committee, you might want to read that, because it also says that the DMR is responsible for licensing and permitting the harvesting in those waters. Just talked about the cutting height a minute ago, the ownership. There's no time limit on these bills that were passed. It says that you have to have a management plan for all licensed harvesting in licenses in the state of Maine. But I think another flaw in those bills was there was no funding given to the DMR to add the personnel that would make that a reality in a timely fashion. The DMR is a shadow of itself. When I started, I have quite a perspective. There's nobody left in the DMR working there that were working there when I started, obviously. But when I started, I got help from the DMR in marketing. They had a 7-man marketing department in 1971 to 78 that went out and promoted the state's marine resources. And with their help, I got several of my accounts where I, when I started, that was eliminated in 78. The mantra or the mission statement for the DMR, quite simply, is to develop, regulate, and promote. And they've basically got enough money to regulate. And they're three different job sets. If you're promoting, you're not a regulator. If you're regulating, you're not developing. I can give you some Down East magazine articles where the personnel from the DMR were developing the Irish moss beds. When marine colloids moved here, they were running on mass in Massachusetts and Maine Irish moss. And you see the enthusiasm in that article from the developers of the DMR were so really happy to produce another fishery that we had on the coast of Maine. That source of product is still there. In fact, if we look at the seaweed business into the future of the processing, we have a $1 billion process fishery harvesting 10% of the standing crop of seaweed resource on the coast of Maine. There's 1 million tons of rockweed standing, and there's 5 million tons of underwater weed, which encompasses the rest of the seaweeds into this book. And you say, well, it is possible. We don't need to bring in outside companies, give them tax breaks. We need to get this management plan done for all species, make it so that somebody can invest. These species are in demand with Fukushima going off over in the Far East. They've polluted a lot of the seaweed beds. We grow not exactly the same species here. There is an iodine deficiency in the U.S. today, which is causing obesity. Seaweed is a tremendous source of iodine and trace minerals. So we have a heck of a future, but we have a lot of job to get done. And I'm encouraging to find some money to get some consultants in or something to help the commissioner and the department work on these projects. There's a lot of work here, and they have one very capable individual that's working with us, but it's going to be a 100 years before you do all the licensed fisheries here with management plans. If you look at the management plan that they've done on page 30, there's a reference to New Brunswick, Canada, and their number one goal of the management plan is to maximize the number of full-time employment opportunities for the residents of New Brunswick. I believe we should be talking about that. A lot of our rockweed that's harvested now goes to New Brunswick, similar to what our lobster fishery does. If this management plan isn't done properly, we're going to lose the rockweed processing facility here. We're going to be a low-grade rockweed supplier of unprocessed weed to New Brunswick. And I don't want to see that happen. I don't think the lobstermen are too happy with that happening either with the fishery. Maybe that can come home at some point. That's over $1 billion of processed fishery that's being done outside here. One of the things we've heard from Lori and a couple other people about DEP and this type of thing, we are certifying our rockweed beds with the Maine Organic Gardeners and Farmers, which I'm also a founding member of, for the new National Organic Program under the USDA. We have to certify our animal feeds came from a wild harvest approved beds. What we're running into is overboard discharges from houses. They have a requirement that we stay away so far from those overboard discharges. What we're trying to figure out, do they still exist? In 1974, there were laws passed that said any time a property was substantially upgraded or it was sold, that their sewer treatment would be, fixed, not overboard. We go into certain bays, Linnekin Bay, those people complaining about Maddox there, I mean, you light that place up. It's got 150 overboard discharges in Linnekin Bay, and every one of those houses is selling for $500 to $2 million, and they haven't been upgraded yet. We need to bring the DEP in. Is your map right? And if it is right, why isn't the law being enforced? I mean, this doesn't just affect our fishery. It affects the other 11 species when they get around to doing the kelps. And Linnekin Bay is a very productive bay because it's semi-ocean. It's not very sheltered in Booth Bay Harbor area. But so it's got a wicked flow in and out. It's got the tidal movement to grow the sea vegetables. And that's just one instance. We've been harvesting close to 500 tons a year out of that bay. And now with the organic requirements, we can't harvest anything. So there's market change. So shouldn't in a management plan, shouldn't a management plan discuss this? Yes, it should. Why not? It's a higher value, and it's the law. We also need to talk about elimination of supplemental licenses. We have harvester boats that are being rented out by the day with supplemental licenses by the actually the guys across the border. And the people have no, you talk about skin in the game, there's no skin in the game. And we believe that somebody that's out captaining a boat ought to have a full seaweed license. We are blessed with the way that our seaweed license money is set up. All our license money goes to a management, a research fund. Currently, as of last year, we had, last fall, I think it was, we had $94,000 in that fund for management purposes, research purposes. But the way that bill was passed, it was never a hearing on that license, and they've missed half the revenue from the seaweed fishery. So only a portion of the revenue is being generated. Our company has a seaweed buyer's license, and we pay a tonnage tax on our rockweed. But there are other companies that don't buy it from anybody. All our harvesters are independent harvesters. I build the cutting, mechanical cutting equipment for them, and they supply the boats. So we're charged a tonnage tax. If that tax had been written right so the whole fishery was paying that tonnage tax, we would probably have closer to a couple hundred thousand dollars in that fund. I know we're in the age of government now where we pay taxes to have the agency there, but then if we want them to do something, we have to supply more money, mechanical cutting. And this is one way we can supply it. I don't think you'll find anybody in the seaweed processing fishery harvester that wouldn't pay more into that fund to accomplish some of these things that we need to be done. So that's another area that, that could actually self-fund what needs to be done. The one of the things came in the management plan. They're talking about the commission or leasing or allotting public trust rights and, you know, private areas to harvest and all of this stuff. Well, in the rockweed beds alone, there's three other species. So are they going to start renting areas? And I don't know, it's very confusing. I'm the one that I'm a free enterprise guy. If there's a bed there with 100 tons in it, we're in the electronic age today. That bed can be opened, the 100 tons can be harvested, it can be electronically reported, and it can be closed. If we want to manage who harvests that, we have licensing ability. We can limit licenses in that area. We can do a lot of things. But the fishery is so uncrowded at the moment. A lot of this stuff, it's for the future planning. But I don't believe that we should be leasing beds for 6 years to somebody who and might or might not. We as a seaweed council back over 12 or 14 years ago, mapped the coast of Maine into 8 zones, 347 sectors. We, as a company, we manage those sectors in our harvest plan. So we are actually, we can't report it with the DMR because nobody would adopt the sectors. The oil reporting, we had that into DMR so that if there was an oil spill, Seth Barker would alert us to the sector and the zone so we could prevent a harvest from in those sectors. But there's other ways that really has to be talked about, and the harvesters need to be involved in that. So those are some of the undone things. And so what I'm asking this committee is to encourage the continuation of this management plan, not just for the health of the rockweed fishery, the whole seaweed fishery, and also if we're doing a template for the rest of the fisheries, we need to see that this first management plan under these two laws is done to the utmost, I guess is what you say. So I'd like your help.
Thank you very much, Mr. Morris. Are there questions or comments for Mr. Morris? Excuse me, Representative Sawicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your time, Mr. Morris. I just had a question about your brochure, or the brochure you provided here, under the rockweed industry section.
Mm-hmm.
The second paragraph states that the Gulf of Maine contains more than 1 million tons of rockweed. And research indicates, based on studies of biomass, productivity, and harvesting, as much as 30 to 40% of the total rockweed standing crop could be harvested sustainably on an annual basis. So,
is there a footnote on that one?
5-8.
I'm not sure. This was a brochure put together by the Dr. Anderson C. Grant operation that spoke this morning and the DMR. So what page are you on?
It's in the middle of, sorry, here.
Over here? Yeah. And so what is your question?
So the question is, given the presentation by Dr. Seeley earlier and the regrowth rate of rockweed, if you're cutting basically 100% of the crop every 3 to 4 years, would follow the numbers here. If you're going to do 30 to 40% on an annual basis, that means within 3 years you've cut everything at least once down to 16 inches. It grows a couple of centimeters a year. How can that be sustainable?
Well, you'll have to ask Dr. Seeley to present her actual scientific studies, because a lot of what she says, she's out on Appledore Island. You know where Isles of Shoals is?
Well, can I ask you a question?
Listen on the weather radio, 38-foot seas. They're lucky there's any rockweed still growing on the island, let alone growing 1 centimeter a year.
What is your understanding of the regrowth rate of rockweed?
It varies from area to area. Our practices over 44 years has been to harvest 35 to 50% of a bed and leave it for 3 years and come back.
And has it grown back to the...
We have 130% more seaweed than when I started in 1971 in the same beds. If you read the fishing management biology section of our plan, you will see that by harvesting, not only do you get regrowth, our cutting height is 16 inches. If you listen to the Canadians, the cutting height and the canopy manages itself. We have a cutting height of 16 inches, but we also have in that regulation its lateral branches. You cut down to the base of the lateral branches. The regrowth comes from the lateral branches. Let's see, we can see here in a picture. You could see that the lateral branching tends to stop down here into the bottom. You don't want to get down in there. You go up here into the top, and then you get regrowth from that. But not only you get regrowth from that. The rockweed in the spring spores, it puts out zygotes, and they float, billions of them, and they float down to where the holdfasts are, and they're like a pine cone in the forest. They remain down there until they get what? Sunlight. You cut off the canopy. Oh, yeah, canopy. Yeah, and all of a sudden they get sunlight. Well, now you've got 8 or 10 new plants coming up. So instead of having just a mature old timber forest, you've got a combination of young, medium, and old. And as far as holdfasts go, the rockweed lives 10 years, and then it gives itself up with its holdfast. So, you're not going to have a zero holdfast fishery. We process 12 months out of the year. It's a little hairy right now. We maybe only get one truckload in. We bring in 25 to 30 tons at a time on a walking floor trailer. Any one of you are welcome to come down and stand there for the 7 or 8 hours and see how many periwinkles, how many dead ducks, or anything else that we pull out of our seaweed, and see how many holdfasts come out. I mean, it's an open deal. I've asked Seeley to come down a few times. She won't come anywhere near the place. I've asked harvesters of periwinkles that complain if they think they're going broke now. They should come down and harvest all these periwinkles we got on the back of the truck. We get smooth and rough periwinkles. They sometimes are on the rockweed itself, but when we mechanically cut it, they shake off. If they're in there, we actually use them in our process because it adds calcium and it adds protein. Because in our heat process, when we dry them, they're totally cooked. So, did that answer?
Yeah, you did. Yes, my question. Thank you.
Embellished it, I think.
Thank you very much, Mr. Morris. Dr. Seeley, I know part of your explanation, you said your research was very limited, dealt with the temperature. You commented on the temperature. Is there anything else you wanted to clarify?
Yes, this is that I showed you wasn't done at the Ozzie Shoals. It was done up in Council Bay, where the water is cooler, but the published regrowth rates are between 1 and 4 inches per main.
Okay. Published where?
Excuse me. Did that help answer your initial question, Representative Salkin?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I wanted to know what the regrowth rates were in general. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative McCrate, did you have a question? And then Representative Pierce? No?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have lots of questions, but...
Yes, I'm sure. I'll try to answer them after the meeting if you'd like.
Sure. I guess my main question, though, is your company is Kelp.
My company is Atlantic Laboratories Incorporated, and we have a DBA North American Kelp. We market in 24 foreign countries, all the states. We sell our high-grade product in the export market in the countries. We sell all our animal feed supplements certified organic for the U.S. market.
Thank you. My question was, clearly you don't just do kelp.
Why?
Because, well, the name on here is kelp.
Okay. Well, you're getting into a real technical area. You're getting into regulations, okay? Regulations call all brown seaweeds kelp. So we can't fight the tape. We can't call it bladderwrack. We can't call it fucoid. We can't do this. Can't do that. Do you realize the regulations on a small business today cost $34,000 an employee, according to the National Association of Manufacturing? We got more regulations than I could start. I couldn't start this business again today.
And you've answered my question, though. I clearly, it's more than kelp, and kelp is the generic term in that sense.
In the regulatory world, they consider kelp the brown seaweeds. There's three classifications of colors of seaweeds, reds, greens, and browns. Mm-hmm. And the browns are considered kelp for the regulatory people.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And why the focus on rockweed today, why is the focus on rockweed?
Because that's the market's been developed for over 70 years, and it's the most available of the seaweeds. It also has high mineral content. It doesn't fluctuate. A kelp will fluctuate 10 times in its nutrient value. A kelp, if you go to the middle page and you look at the kelps, or you go through here, a kelp that grows in the low tide mark has a 10-to-1 ratio between high and low nutrients. And a rockweed plant has a 5% up or down, so it's fairly constant. And we have to guarantee certain mineral levels for fertilizer for animal feed, and so it lends itself very nicely to that. What we're basically doing with the seaweed is we're recycling the washout of the minerals of the soil. There's 60 trace minerals in the kelp, and when the seaweed, sea vegetables, when they digest the ocean, they break the mineral size down into the right angstrom form to penetrate the blood barrier of man and animals and the intercellular cracks of plants. One of our biggest product lines is the liquid fertilizer with the growth hormones in it. We use one pint to the acre. We can cut down over 50% of the chemical use and herbicide, fungicide, and pesticide by adding one pint to the acre of this product with the application. We have a badge to wear on that, too, because Esso banned us from Canada because we were reducing an $800 million herbicide market to $400. They pulled all our registrations in Canada because of that. So we know it works, but the other countries we sell to, that's what they use it for.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your information.
Welcome.